Welcome, fellow seekers. My name is Nathan, and this is the Law of One and Spiritual Concepts podcast, where I share my interpretations of the Law of One and other related topics. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by the LL Research Team to recap the recent Law of One contemplative retreat this team had hosted, and that I had the pleasure to be a part of. We'll also get into some discussions on meditation practices. So without further ado, let's get into it. I hope you enjoy. Welcome, everybody. Today, I'm joined by the LL Research Team of Gary, Austin, and Trish, along with Wes, who is a facilitator for the Law of One study group in North Carolina, and was also a facilitator for the Law of One contemplative retreat, which we'll be talking about today. So this retreat happened back about 2 months ago at Crestone, Colorado, and was truly an amazing experience. So I just wanted to start by thanking you all for facilitating this and setting up that whole experience. I know everyone I've talked to had an equally amazing time, so thank you again for that.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll start by putting you on the spot, Gary, and asking you guys, how did you come up with this idea, or what prompted this?
Yeah, well, it was so great to be there, and thank you for hosting us on this podcast, and so that we can talk about and explore the retreat and so forth. Trish, would you like to talk about discovery of the venue, and then I'll talk about how the contemplative retreat itself came about?
Sure. Yeah. So as the event manager, I'm pretty often scouring venues across the country and trying to find new places that we can go and host these events. And along the way, I've subscribed to various venues to get their newsletters. And I was finding myself in a bit of a bind at the beginning of the year because one of our venues was completely booked up, one that we were hoping to go back to. And so I had to restart the search all over again. And luck would have it, one of these newsletters fell into my inbox from a venue saying that they had this retreat space in Colorado and they're offering a big grant for an organization that will utilize the space for a meditative or contemplative retreat. And luck would have it that we talked about it as a group to say, you know, what kinds of things are we interested in? Could we figure out something to meet the requirements so we could apply for this grant? And we were all pretty jazzed about the idea. And so we applied, and I swear within a week we had the venue booked, and it was then the wheels were turning to try to figure out what that's going to look like.
Yeah. And since Trish has become event manager, she has scoured the United States and contacted probably over 30 venues.
Probably up to 40.
Really? Right
now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's surprising like how many don't qualify because they're either too expensive, or you have to prove your Christian bona fides, or they require people to bunk up or, you know, share rooms and so forth. But yeah, so like Trish said, we had the opportunity of this grant, and the primary qualification for this grant was that 30% of the curriculum needed dedicated to meditative contemplative practice. And we had long wanted to do something in the way of more applied spirituality anyway. And I personally have a background having gone to various silent meditation retreats, and they are a deep and personal love of mine. I've had very transformative, profound experiences at silent meditation retreats. So this all converged, like us wanting to do applied spirituality, my very strongly wanting to share silent meditation retreats with the Law of One community. So we put our minds together and developed a curriculum that would incorporate elements of a silent meditation retreat into our standard open space format, which we learned from West, who's on the call, and her partner, Aaron, some years back, beginning in 2018. And what do I mean by incorporate elements of a silent meditation retreat? Well, we designed for a silent morning, which would begin with a shared breakfast meal in intentional silence and would continue onward to the main meeting space where there were like 42-ish somewhere in that range of people. Big, yeah. Beautiful meeting hall. We can explore that later. But we would all gather in the meeting hall, and this facility, Blazing Mountain Retreat Center, was stock full with meditation equipment, like zafus and zabutons and backjacks with a big, beautiful hardwood floor. So we would, most of us would arrange ourselves on the floor, some in seats, and we gathered for group meditation. It began with, so I won't go through the whole curriculum. I'll just answer the part about, you know, making this, incorporating elements of a silent meditation retreat. We would gather for group meditation for an hour that would kick off with 10 minutes of some meditation guidance. None of us presented ourselves as meditation teachers, just gave some pointers and reflections and thoughts on meditation. West tackling the first day, me facilitating the second, Austin the third. And once those 10 minutes were done, we had an hour together in silence in group meditation. And then the other couple pieces of how it incorporated elements of a silent meditation retreat included silent transitions between the scheduled blocks of time, though that didn't hold perfectly. And then finally, to conclude in the evening, we got back together to have a 30, 45 minute discussion about meditation, and then a final group meditation at the evening.
And it was amazing. I think I will admit I struggled with the silent transitions at that point. The energies were just brimming at that point. So everyone was just so ready to start chatting. But
you were running the line.
Yeah. So I guess let's start talking a little bit about some of the experiences as well as maybe some takeaways that we had from there. So West, maybe you could share anything that you would come away with, or just maybe your overall experience.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. One of the things that I noticed during the retreat, I guess this was, I lose track now, but maybe like the fifth or so that I've co-hosted or co-facilitated with LL. And I consider myself an introvert, and often in a group space, will need to kind of pull away at some point and just be with myself in silence, just to recharge. And it was fascinating to me to notice that co-hosting this retreat where the silence and the self-check like was built in to such a degree that I did not need to recharge on my own, which I just love. Like, and it kind of even potentially changes my self-concept, you know, that I think I call myself an introvert because I need, quote, alone time to recharge, but I don't necessarily need alone time. I need silent, still inward time, but it doesn't have to be by myself, which was really fascinating. And yeah, personally insightful.
Yeah, that's a beautiful concept there too. I think that's probably something I need to explore as well, because I can relate to you on that front as well, where I can do so much social interaction, but also then need some alone time usually to kind of regroup, and usually sitting in that silence. But when you combine the two, maybe that's the magic recipe.
Yeah.
So Austin, what about you? What was your experience, and maybe any takeaways that you had from this?
Well, first, thank you, Nathan, for inviting us all to this podcast, and it's an honor to be able to be in this position to host an event like this and to talk about it with people like you. So I think going into this, I didn't really know what to expect. Unlike Gary, I've never done a meditation retreat. I've never really felt called to a meditation retreat. So I had no clue, like, what does it even mean to host a meditation retreat besides just getting people in a room and being like, all right, meditate. That was kind of my idea. And that's kind of what we did in a sense. But I had never experienced it before. I've experienced some group meditations in limited containers, such as we used to do silent meditations with Jim in his home on some Saturdays on same schedule that we would do channeling. We'd alternate silent meditation and channeling. So I'd meditate with groups in that setting, but not in a more expansive container where there's a larger group and everybody put in a lot of effort to get there. This location is kind of remote and it's not easy to get to. So I think that alone charges this sort of space that we were in. There's a lot of people have this strong desire to be with other people for this purpose, which was really palpable to me in the setting and in the people and in the whole experience. And the thing that really surprised me the most was how much having just a part of the day dedicated to silence affected the rest of the experience. Because LL events, basically every LL event I've been to for the most part has been our normal, very social, very lively, very active kind of event. And there hasn't been dedicated time for silence and introspection. And those are really great. They're amazing. People love them. I love them. And people have really profound and amazing experiences and make connections. But adding that quality of starting the day with silence affected the rest of the event. Not like it didn't necessarily bring it down, because like we're talking about, the silent transitions weren't so silent, but it added this quality of specialness. And there's like a sort of a spark, an aliveness of not like a jubilant active aliveness, but this quality that isn't normally there during the events. And so that quality, or the silence, I really think affected the quality of the people's ability to make connections and touch into something deeper and find what we were looking for.
Mm. Well said. I think so. This was my first LL research event as well too. So I hadn't experienced maybe some more of your homecoming events and some of the other similar ones to this. So this was my first groundbreaking sort of experience. But yeah, I really loved the combination of it all and getting to blend it with the meditation as well, too. So Gary and Trish, what about you guys? What was your overall experience or any takeaways that you guys had from there?
So similar to what Austin spoke on, the silent element was something that is very unique, obviously, to this event and very much outside of how our events usually go. Like our one that we have outside of Seattle is kind of like summer camp. Like it's incredibly social. And so I, too, had a bit of concern, well, not concern, openness and wondering what this would look like with so much silence, because I'm so used to this summer camp kind of experience. And I think I was just really floored by, even though there was so much silence throughout the day and inner solitude and inner quiet, the connections were still forming so organically between people, and you could see friendships were budding. And it's just amazing that in a group where there is less socializing intentionally, that you can still see this like connected group dynamic, like organically be birthed because, again, that like shared intention, we're coming here to do this work, but also an intention of connection. It was just really special to witness that. And I think it also helped people share more authentically and intentionally as well, because there was so much limited social time. So I think that's what I found most inspiring.
Yeah. A couple quick caveats, I guess. First, I'm glad, Nathan, that you said this was your first one, because at the very beginning, I almost said it was great seeing you again. And then I'm like, wait, no, we just met Nathan for the first time. But I felt like we've met you before. But no, so it was awesome meeting you in person, because I know, you know, we've done a podcast years past and have talked. And also another probably unimportant side note, and that's that the grant that we received was from a generous anonymous donor, and not through us, but via the facility. And they contributed 1/3 of the cost of the event, thus making it more affordable. Because these, you know, we do our best to keep costs down, but there's still, these venues are very expensive when you consider that so many people are lodging there, and they're providing breakfast, lunch, and dinner for everybody. So that said, my experience, well, like I have a producer's mindset and some in a smaller proportion of participants' mindset. And from kind of maybe personal straddling into producer, I loved sharing group silent meditation in a more intentional setting in a Law of One, with a Law of One group. It made my heart so happy to have this experience, because a lot of people hadn't been in a large group for intentional silence for an hour length. In fact, when we were designing the curriculum, we wanted to build for a full hour of meditation, but we didn't know how a Law of One group would do with that. Like, personally, I love an hour straight of meditation, but we thought people could become restless or be discontent with it. So to try to mitigate that, we designed that first hour block of meditation so that there, as you know, Nathan, there would be a ping that would go off, just a meditation bell at the 30-minute mark. And we invited anybody who wanted to continue their meditation on their own, whether in their rooms or walking meditation, to vacate the space as they felt called to do so. And at the very first hour block, when that 30-minute mark hit, I expected an exodus. But, you know, everybody was determined and stayed through it. And I was kind of braced maybe after that meditation or even after the event for people to maybe even grumble and say, you know, I came to chat. I came to connect. And we're being forced to, sit here on a pad in silence. But to a person, everybody, there's a lot of people, like I said, who are new to that format and knew even, there are many people who hadn't even meditated for an hour straight before. And to a person, everybody was approached it not only with such intent and earnestness, but they were grateful for it. And it's, we heard more about the, we also heard a lot about the breakfasts too. Some people did convey that they were feeling a little resistance to, we're going to share a meal with everyone and not talk. But also there was a, transformation on that point where people could see what I personally experienced and what people far more experienced with silent meditation retreats know better than me. And that is that there is a profound joy and intimacy available when the silence is intentional and you share a meal together in group and you're intending to eat mindfully. And you're just hearing the shuffle of chairs and the silverware on the plates. And there is a strong field of togetherness in that, where you can be more present with your own energy and kind of paradoxically even more present with others when you're not worried about what are you going to say in response or listening to somebody or, you know, all the trappings of interpersonal dynamics and social etiquette and so forth. So that those aspects were a very profound and important part for me, being able for the first time, you know, my first LL Research gathering was in 2002. So it is 2025 now, so it's 23 years. And the first one that I produced when Carla threw me into the ring was in 2006. So it's almost, 20 years of being part of the production of events. And I've never had this opportunity before to share group meditation with Law of One students. And that alone filled my heart. So, yeah, satisfied. And then in terms of my personal experience, I found it very difficult to let the producer mind quiet down during the meditations. It was just go, go, go. But nevertheless, I did sink into the space and feel what West and Austin and Trish were describing. And it was very, I think all four of us on this call, I'm not sure about you, Nathan, but we're all on the introverted side and we need recharging after intense social experiences. And like West was saying, it was a great balance to have the silence in what is otherwise a very boisterous event. It was a good balance. How about you? What was your experience?
Oh my gosh. Well, honestly, it was like almost a little overwhelming to a certain extent too, because I was so excited being the first time around going through all this. I'm a big meditation advocate as well too. And this was the first time I'd meditated in a group setting like this at a retreat center and everything. So it was interesting. I think the first day was a little weird. Maybe it was just kind of like getting out some of the nervousness or the uncomfortableness maybe to some of it. You sit down for an hour long meditation and people are sneezing and you're kind of like moving around, adjusting, and you just kind of learn to, you know, go with the flow, and it all just kind of gets normal. Cause my practice is very quiet and I do it very early in the morning. So there's like no noise, nothing going on. So it was a little abrupt at first to me, but then there was like this connectedness you kind of felt with the room and everybody in there. And it changed the whole environment, it seemed like, at that point. So I was really blessed at that point to have been able to experience that. So, yeah, and it just, I couldn't believe the group was just so open-hearted. You could relate to anybody there. We were all relating on the Law of One, which, you know, is near and dear to all of our hearts. So it was, it was incredible. I think it's hard to pick out one thing that I would have as like a takeaway, because it was just an overall incredible experience to me. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I guess it was still, I still think about it quite a bit, because the hardest part, I think, was probably going back, reintegrating yourself into your normal day-to-day lives here. I'm sure we're all kind of busy from that sense too, and trying to bring that calmness and stillness into it. So yeah, I think that was kind of the next part I wanted to talk about a little bit, was maybe more of our day-to-day meditation practices, how those can be, and maybe what you've taken away from the Confederation in regards to meditation, for maybe the listeners can take some hints or clues from some of that as well too. So I don't know, Austin, if you have anything you might be able to share with us.
Yeah, sure. So it's a sort of two-part question, like asking about our day-to-day, our own meditation practices, and then takeaways from the Confederation.
Yeah. If you have something on either of them, but yeah, or both.
Yeah, so like my meditation practice is very simple, and I, for the most part, I can keep up a daily practice, but it's 15 to 20 minutes for the most part. I'll typically set a timer for 15 minutes and go over a little bit. But it's basically just, for the most part, mindfulness meditation, trying to find the silence in that short period. But I haven't ever developed a more intensive meditation practice myself. So this was also a unique experience for me, and having dedicated time to sit for like an hour straight in meditation. So that helped introduce me to like the more longer meditations, what's possible. I had long meditations when I first had my spiritual awakening, but they were different because I was going through so much catalyst. It was all just like catalyst processing. It wasn't really silent. Finding that silence is a relatively new thing for me in that sense. So it helped me become more familiar with that kind of meditation. And just reflecting on the nature of meditation, preparing for the event, preparing stuff that I would help say for guiding the meditation, and the presentation that I gave about meditation, got more familiar with the Confederation's take on meditation and what they encourage. And it's always sometimes frustrating to me how hesitant they are to recommend anything specific. They always are just like, meditate, but then no more interpretation. Just do that and figure it out yourself for the most part. So it's really interesting. But I do think that I understand a little bit better now that the reason they say that is because the method and the technique and even the so-called success of meditation isn't really what it's about. It is about the desire that is bringing you to that meditation. So one thing that really has been on my mind since the retreat is the question, why do we meditate? And everybody's going to have a different answer, but, you know, early on in my spiritual journey, why did I meditate? Because, you know, the Confederation told me to meditate. I understand it's how we process catalyst. It's very utilitarian. Like, you know, I find some peace in it. But then I have realized my desires evolved to the desire to touch something that can only be found in meditation, the creator, the love of the creator, and meditation being the really biggest way to become familiar with those currents inside of you that help you realize and see the love of the creator. And then you can take that out and use that perception in the real world too. So that's really like my biggest takeaway right now from what the Confederation says about meditation and how they approach meditation is that the intention behind it, and more specifically for me, the desire, like what are you desiring that is leading you to meditation? That is the heart of it. And however it manifests is, you know, just details. The heart is really what is bringing you there.
Wow. Beautifully said, Austin. Mm. What about you, West? I know you have a meditation background as well, too, and some teaching as well. So what's your take on it all?
Oh, my take. Well, I guess I first just say I was really touched just now by what you shared, Austin. I really appreciate that perspective of why do we meditate, and the draw towards meditation, that like inner call is just a huge part of it. I really am touched by that. I'm going to sit with that. So meditation for me, I think at this point in my life, I feel like meditation is like a reclamation of truth. And we live most of the time in the illusion, right? Like appearing as these separate bodies that are here for a finite time, and, you know, just all of that illusion. And I think meditation is a returning to the self and just being the self. And I do practice silent meditation in that way. I consider myself part of a lineage of the direct path, and various teachers. And then I also personally practice, like once I have returned to that self, the undistorted reality, I practice carrying that truth, which is love, basically. I practice love in my day-to-day life, and I consider that meditation too. And the most consistent way that I've practiced that is the in the lineage of the work of Byron Katie, which is a meditative self-inquiry. It's like an active, facilitated meditative practice, which corresponds to me in Confederation channelings most directly with like finding love in the moment. In each moment contains love, and find that. And it's a way to find that love, even in a moment that seems, you know, terrible, you know, in one way or another. Any moment that seems terrible, can you find that love? And it's a specific practice to do that. So I have carried that way of being into my life, and I sit with that practice. Like it can be a time to sit and reflect on a moment of the past and go through the process. And I do that, but I also carry that practice with me throughout my day, which one of the shorthands that has become for me throughout my day is specifically to notice any advice that I have for someone else. And then in the moment that I have that advice, can I follow that advice myself? And am I following it? And can I follow it? And for me, that's a hugely profound practice. And it's a way of actualizing my inner guidance in a moment by moment way that, like, you know, like if I had some advice to you, Nathan, you should be doing, I don't know, you should be, let's just say, like, you were rude to me and you should be more kind to me or something. Mm-hmm. Not saying that that happened, but let's just, you know, imagine your guidance doesn't come to me. So that would be crazy to think that I know what you need to do right now. Rather, what just came to me that appears as though it's for you to do, that's for me to live. So it's a practice of integrity. And that for me is a meditative practice too, like staying in contact with the integrity and the love that I am and bringing it forth.
Oh, that's incredible. I think that's a really great practice. I think I'm going to have to keep that one in mind too. So you don't have to do the do as I say, not as I do kind of teachings, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for that, Wes.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What about you, Trish? Any confederation teachings that have stood out to you, or what's your meditation and daily meditation practice look like?
Ooh, the daily part is interesting.
Oh, sorry. I guess I'm projecting onto you if you actually do practice daily or do not.
No, I am probably the least studied and least experienced out of the four of us on our team with meditation. And I have no daily practice that's intentional in terms of sitting in silence. Whenever in the lead up to this event, and I'm sure Gary will speak on this, we did do a daily meditation, the both of us. And I found that to be incredibly powerful. I am unfortunately a creature who struggles with sitting still. And so sometimes I find it really challenging to have those moments where I just release all of the 3D world and the costume and, like Wes said, just sit with self. But I think what was the most powerful aspect of having this experience at the retreat and the lead up, the training, if you will, to this retreat was just realizing that there is power within me to, and I think it comes down to self-acceptance, to allow the self to have that intentional time to be in silence, to be reflective, to be contemplative, because that is something I think I struggle with, is the idea of worthiness of that. You know, there's always something that needs to be done, something that needs to be tended to outside of myself, but realizing that I have worth there, that I'm worthy of that, has been kind of life-changing. And then also experiencing that as a, and within a group container, and recognizing, wow, there's like a palpable power to that. There's something really intense that you can touch into whenever you meditate as a group. So sometimes I feel like I'm chasing that high a little bit. Like, I'm not going to get that same experience just the two of us, I tell myself. But I know that that's...
You're saying I'm that powerful?
Yeah. Right now, Gary's flexing his very big muscles on screen.
Metaphysical muscle.
I tell myself that that's not possible, but I know it is. And in terms of the Confederation wisdom, I can't speak to anything specifically other than... I had a bit of a blast just researching the quotes from the archives. As you remember in that attendee binder, there was a collection of meditation quotes that we got from the transcript library. And I just, over time, have been collecting, well, Gary and I have been collecting quotes over time, and I found just an amazing assortment of ones that I had not stumbled upon before, and probably could have spent weeks upon weeks upon weeks just, you know, researching these quotes. And so there's a lot of excitement there too about getting back into that research mode and seeing what other gems can be mined Because there are some that are just so, some short little nuggets that just like hit really hard. I call them my quotes that go hard. Yeah. So, it's been really awesome to go back into that little collection every once in a while and get some inspiration from it. And one more point that I'd like to speak to is also that I find myself having a lot of joy in the contemplative process outside of silence too. I have a hard time sitting still sometimes, and I like to get things done, and finding joy in the process of just being super present when I'm doing those tasks and not worried about how the task needs to be done or the fact that the task is being done, but just being able to recognize the illusion that we dance in while I'm doing a task, while I'm folding the laundry and noticing how soft the towels feel in my hand and how beautiful the color of the fabric, and yeah, just being more aware and appreciative of the beauty of this illusion in the process of things that, you know, normal tasks that would be filled with, you know, 10 million other thoughts. I think that's me.
I think we can all take something from that. So thank you, Trish. Yeah. I see Wes, you had something else to add?
Yeah, I really love what you shared, Trish. So I just want to say that too. But yeah, after I shared, I had the thought to look at, there's a quote on my computer desktop that I keep that is a reference to finding love in the moment from Quo. And it is, if you see anything except the face of love, you're having difficulties with perception. So yeah, I just want to add that in, that I work actively with my perception.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
That was Wes's way of saying she's, I won't make the joke. Never mind.
Oh, come on. You've started it now.
She's a hateful person. She's working with her perceptions. But she's obviously the opposite of that.
Well, Gary, I think we're on to you now then.
I could talk about meditation for quite a while, which is also kind of contradictory, you know, in terms of talking about a practice that is in some ways of negation of stillness and silence. But daily meditation practice comes and goes in my life. It is my goal, my hope, my intent to be daily forever. But it, I find it often gets sacrificed on the altar of busyness and poor life choices at times. But when I'm in that rhythm of daily meditation, like Austin, I use and Wes as well, use a meditation app called Insight Meditation Timer. It's amazing. It literally has all the bells and whistles that one could want. But tracks your history and so forth. Anyway, I can sit motionless forever. That is not an issue for me, like Trish was describing. The challenge is in the mind complex and the thoughts and the just compulsive, incessant, often erratic thinking and attempting to gently and with love and non-judgment and non-attachment and non-aversion witness that mind and help it to come into a focus and quiet down. And for me, my method is, you know, there are various sorts of meditation methods, of course, from Vipassana to metta to Zen style, walking, active inquiry, so on and so forth. For me, it's very simple. It is simply concentration. I think that is the cornerstone of any meditation practice, is the capacity for the mind to focus in a sustained way. And what that looks like for me is an infinitely repeated attempt to bring my attention to a chosen point of focus, which for me is the inflow and the outflow of the breath. And to do essentially nothing else but to cultivate that concentration and be present with what is arising. You know, if a thought arises, witness it, let it be, let it fall away, without attempting to chase that which is pleasurable, be it a sensation, a thought, an imagination, a fantasy, or a practice aversion, you know, running away from, fearing, suppressing, whatever, something that is unpleasant, some dark past memory, some turbulent emotion inside, whatever the case may be. Allow thoughts to rise and fall on their own and keep the focus on the chosen point of focus, the attention on the chosen point of focus. And the more that one can do this, that is, bring the attention to the breath, then the more that the monkey mind begins to settle down and one discovers inner spaciousness inside. The challenge, of course, is we're all kind of, I just picture somebody like a rope tied to somebody's ankle, and they're just being dragged along by a cart being driven by monkeys hopped up on amphetamines. In terms of, like, we're being carried away by our own minds. Our thought machine is living us in a way. So getting that to focus and getting it to rest is the perennial challenge. And one, at least myself, I think it's quite ubiquitous, actually, for beginning and intermediate meditators. One invariably finds that their attention has been hijacked. It's rapidly gone on some other excursion, and there you are sitting in your meditative pose, whatever that might look like for you. Me, it's on the floor. I love being on the floor. And you're off thinking. Whether you're planning for the future or reminiscing about the past, as the case may be. And then suddenly you wake up and remember, and you become present, and you realize, wait a minute, I'm doing something here. I've got a mission. I'm meditating. So when that moment of awakeness and awareness comes, you just gently bring your attention back to your breath. And then when inevitably it drifts away, you wake up again and bring it back to your breath. I was just thinking about it. I used to play baseball for local league when I was in middle school. I kind of sucked at it, but I loved it. And I used to play baseball also just for fun with the neighborhood kids. And I would go up to the plate, and if I would swing and miss or strike out, I just had this unrelenting desire to get back up there again and try again. And if I would fail, try again and keep just trying. And it's similar with meditation. You know, fortunately, I have a patience with myself in this practice, not always the most patient person. And I have the need to try again when the attention is stolen away, to come back to the breath and come back and come back. And over time, I have the more it is like a muscle, and that the more it is practiced, the more that the muscle memory of cultivating single-pointed attention develops, such that it begins to happen on its own, such that the attention will begin to rest on your chosen point of focus. And that is difficult in the turbulence and roar of the daily life to attempt to cultivate, even, you know, 20 minutes, 60 minute morning meditation, whatever the case may be. I experienced the most profound fruit of this in a 10-day silent meditation retreat, which is kind of described as a meditation boot camp. It's the SN Goenka style, where all we did was meditate for hours on end. And just through sheer persistence, and this very simple method I'm describing, which is also called Anapana meditation, I experienced for the first and so far only time in my life during that retreat, cessation of thought and, you know, awareness without thought. Maybe thought might arise kind of on the periphery on its own, but it wasn't important. It didn't take over the stage of my mind. I was just there and present. And a lot of insight came out of that, one point of which was it's sort of epiphany for me that, you know, without the thinking mind, where is the suffering? Most suffering, you know, most suffering is, if not all suffering, is self-created by this inner pageantry we have in our heads of the various characters on the stage of our mind and the fights or the arguments or the wounds that we have and play over and over. And to try to wrap this up in term to segue over to the Confederation and the value of meditation, Eckhart Tolle said that the most important step one can take on their spiritual journey is disidentification from thought. Thought, as I understand it, is an opaque screen to our true and actual and real nature. Like West was describing, the undistorted self, the real self, and like Austin was saying, the creator within. We are lost in thought. We are lost in a dream that is creating a false sense of self, a self that does not exist. So thus, if one seeks to experience the true self, the real nature, one must, whatever verb you want to use, pierce through that thought. Find silence, essentially, and not be so identified with the thinking mind that is creating an illusion that there is a separate self. And thus, meditation, in my understanding, is the principal means of engaging that deep spiritual work of experiencing silence and stillness within. You know, in Ra's technical language, intelligent infinity is one and the same with the creator, is one and the same with our true nature. And to my understanding, the doorway is total stillness and total silence. Intelligent infinity doesn't have words that can really be applied to it because it's infinite. But if it is anything, it is still, utterly still and silent. There's no movement. There's no distortion in infinity. But we are captured by our thoughts. Thus, the necessity, as Tolle describes, of disidentifying, no longer creating an identity of our thoughts, not squashing thoughts or exterminating them necessarily, but no longer identifying with them. And meditation is a key means for that. And to the Confederation, like Austin was describing, they are just insistent on that method above all others without specific instructions. But they describe it variably, especially in terms of tabernacling with the creator, was a phrase in Carla's repertoire, especially. So you see it a lot in her channelings. But really, it is a way to contact the creator within, which isn't some external deity that one is contacting, though there is a relationship insofar as one perceives himself as a separate self. But rather, the creator equals self, as West was describing, the undistorted self, one's own true nature that is already there. We don't have to gain it. We don't have to manufacture it. We don't have to obtain it it's literally already our true nature, but we're, like I said, lost in a dream. So the Confederation, in my vague recollection, points in that direction. They describe meditation as an act of deep listening. And they seem to say that, this is my final point, they seem to say that the intention is the most important part of meditation. Simply by sincerely intending to meditate, I don't know, you are sending signals down to the subconscious mind indicating that you are willing to be receptive. You, the conscious mind, you, is willing to listen, is willing to try to find alignment with your deeper and truer nature. You're becoming a vessel, you're opening, and you're saying, I'm here, who am I? And yeah, I'll hit the brakes there. Thank you, everybody, for your patience.
Thank you for that, Gary. There's, I feel like, a lot there to unpack, but I will just kind of tail off of your final point, because that was kind of where I was thinking as well. At least what this retreat brought up for me is I tend to practice Kriya Yoga meditation. So it's a lot of, I guess I'd say, more of like the doing. So you're doing like breathing exercises, a lot of preparatory work before you sit in that stillness or the silence. But I wasn't overemphasizing maybe that silence aspect to it. So you'd be doing all these practices for, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and then it would be like 5 minutes of silence. And then it'd be like Trish was saying, get up. And okay, now I'm thinking about everything else I need to do today or something else there. Where this retreat for me at least was a good reminder to sit in that silence and have that time to be in that silence more, but maybe more importantly, be open and be receptive to allowing the creator to come in that space. And I think that was kind of probably one of my key takeaways, I think, from that retreat as well, too, was making that space, setting that intention, and yeah, being open and receptive to it. So it was pretty powerful and a good reminder, because it's, I always think back to that session 5, which I think you were starting to allude to there, Gary, it was 5.2, where it's, the mind must be open like a door and the key is silence. And it's like, it sounds so easy, but actually sitting there in that silence for that longer period of time to actually maybe fully embrace that is another thing, at least for me. Powerful stuff. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of our time here, so I want to be respectful for you guys, but I would like to check in maybe with each of you one more time and see what else is in the queue for LL Research. And maybe Wes, you can start by sharing a little bit about your, I think you do the Temple of the Open Heart as well community. Yeah. Maybe you can share a few things for us there and any other work or somewhere we can direct the listeners to.
Gosh, what is up in toto? Well, actually, an interesting thing that has transpired recently is the little village that is the headquarters for Toto, which is where I am right now. There's a little cluster of us who tend land and homes together. One of the homes is going to be available starting next month. So we're figuring out what to do with that and how to continue to steward community in new ways. So we might be inviting new participants into our community village experiment. And I actually just came from a meeting where we were talking about all those possibilities. So that's top of mind. Another one of the things we're up to lately is actually a collaboration between Toto and LL, or sort of, at least a collaboration between myself and Gary. We host a regular study group on the talks of Ramana Maharshi. And so we include a snippet of meditation within that study group every time we come together and then study his teachings and attempt to apply them in our own lives or see what it brings up for us. And that's a joy and a pleasure. That's what comes to mind.
and your fourth density, 4D Saturdays.
Yeah, we have regular offerings too. We have a Yeah, so Fourth Density, it's actually Sundays now. It used to be on Saturdays, but now we have it every fourth Sunday of the month. So that's our in-person local gathering. And it's like a mini coming home retreat because it's held mm-hmm. in open space. So we come together and have a opening circle, and we have two slots for time slots for offerings and different breakout spaces. So more than two offerings can happen. And then we end with a potluck. We also have seasonal fires every equinox and solstice. So yeah, there's a lot that goes on within our community. And one of the things that I find to be really potent and powerful is just our commitment. Like, we have a membership agreement, like what it means to be part of Toto and like choose to be part of Toto is like a recognition that we live like in a mixed polarity environment and that we, you know, of Earth, and that we choose to come together intentionally and explicitly on the path of the open heart. And when there is a sense of disharmony or disconnection within our community space, that we will attempt to bridge, you know, that disconnect. And yeah, so there's like a depth of relationship and intending to continue to be on the path together, even after perhaps a rupture, you know, may happen. And I think that's so beautiful, you know, to not skip past the challenging things and not avoid them, you know, and not just go our separate ways, you know, but to intentionally, explicitly practice conflict transformation.
Yeah, really working with the catalyst there, huh?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for all you do, Wes, and appreciate it. You're quite busy and got quite a bit on your plate as well. So thank you for all that you have to offer.
Yeah.
Quick interjection. Wes, do you have a website?
Oh, we do. Yeah. So it's totoh.org, which is short for Temple of the Open Heart.org.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
What about you, Austin, in closing as well? What's on your plate for LL Research?
Well, since I am going first, I get to steal the big one. We're getting ready to head to Europe to do our two events in Europe. We're leaving next Tuesday, headed to Prague, where we will host our Law of One gathering in Prague, which is an open space style event, no intentional meditation, but I'm sure we'll be meditating some. And then the weekend after that, we'll be in Berlin for a similar kind of event, but this time facilitated with our friends in the Law of One Telegram, European Telegram group, Daniel and Tot. And I should note, the Prague event is co-facilitated with our good friends and Czech translator, member of the Czech translation team, Vojta, and his wife, Emily, in Prague. So, yeah, getting ready to do that. There's lots of other things on the plate and on the horizon, but I'll save some for Gary and Trish.
Beautiful. Well, go ahead, guys.
Yeah, the events season is rolling. As Austin mentioned, we have Prague and we have Berlin, and then a month and a half later, we have our homecoming event in Kentucky, which will be out on this beautiful 350-acre farm in central Kentucky that for the first time, and we're really excited about that prospect because it has previously just been held in Jim's home and yard, I should say gardens, that he lovingly tends to. So we have this new venue that just offers a ton of space, and the owners and stewards of that land are also highly spiritual people and hippies who are just lovely and gorgeous and looking forward to maybe some potential cross-pollination with them as well. And then back to figuring out what next year's events look like and where we can, you know, tune up our ship a bit for, you know, upcoming events, and got a lot of great feedback from folks at the contemplative retreat that I'm excited that maybe we can add into a potential contemplative retreat next year. We shall see. But yeah, just really excited for all these little points of connection that we are so blessed and fortunate to be a part of.
Excellent. Well, you were kind of starting to allude to maybe my final question also, is if we can expect another one. So maybe we'll come back to that, and I'll let Gary.
Yeah, I would add a couple things to what Austin and Trish said in terms of big projects in LL Research world. And one is the project to publish the videos for the Tilting at Windmills interviews. So in 8 months before Carla passed, she and Jim allowed me to grill them over the course of 7 consecutive days with like over 400 questions to try to capture the biography of LL Research and of their personal lives. And that was all recorded on film by our dear friend who is by Ken Wendt, our dear friend. And that recording has been, you know, sitting on a hard drive for 11 years. I mean, there's been work done to synthesize and unify the video and audio feeds and begin to get it ready. But it's finally now nearing that place where we're getting ready to publish it. I just need, anyway, working with some volunteers and need to take some final steps to get it ready. But we hope once the ball gets rolling, we hope to be able to, it's like 20 hours worth of footage of Carla and Jim being interviewed. And we hope to get into a rhythm of like publishing one every week or every 2 weeks once it gets going. So I'm wildly excited about that. And then the final big, big project is the new website. I say new. With a hyphen between, because, you know, we launched a new website in September 2021. So this is new. And it's a complete, it's an overhaul of the architecture of the website that will achieve various goals, including creating free user accounts that will allow readers to log into the website and interact with that vast library as if it were a real library, almost, including being able to mark transcripts as read, unread, favorite, to read, highlighting transcripts, annotating them, accessing through your dashboard all of your highlights and your annotations and your tags. You can create your own custom tag database. Thanks, Russ. I'm on creating a system where the LL's material is available now in 26 different languages, and we're working with translators all over the world and creating a system where they can publish and edit content in their language directly. And I'm missing another item or two. This has been a project at least 2 years in the works now. It's a slower burn than I would have anticipated, but hopefully by, I'm not going to put a date on it. our projections are always wrong. Something before fourth densities here, we're going to have this one.
Well, something to look forward to. Yeah.
Hopefully 40s tomorrow, so.
Yeah, I'm eager about the website, but I'd rather see fourth density.
Yeah, let's just put it that way.
Hey, I was just happy about the search function you guys included on the website. The, I guess, new website that you put out there. That was game changer there, because yeah. I think, as everyone knows, the Quo material is quite extensive, so it was awesome to be able to kind of search and be able to see different transcripts I'd never seen before and bring up other points that support Ra and everything from there too. And I really enjoyed that. So I can only imagine what the new website has to offer us all then. Well, on that note, thank you all for taking the time and to join us here today and talk about the Law of One and the contemplative retreat, and really appreciate all the work that you all have done. It's really been, very heartfelt here, at least to me, and I think to quite a few others as well. So thanks again for taking the time, and hopefully we'll get to see you all here in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Nathan. And thanks for being disciplined about the time, too, with us chatty people. It's been an honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
such you. An honor to know each of you and get to share our hearts in this way. Thanks for bringing us together, Nathan.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks again. And that's a wrap for this interview with the beloved LL Research team. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to have had this discussion with such open-hearted, service-oriented other selves, and hope it may offer some meditation inspiration or maybe spark interest in joining an upcoming LL event. One last time, I'll offer my thanks and gratitude to this team in taking the time for this interview, along with all the other amazing projects they offer in service to others. I'll have links in the description below if anyone's interested in learning more about them. Until next time, I leave you now in the love and in the light.